electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours working in minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself. They only have our own monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
We're back about 5 minutes to the top of the hour and gives us about 20 minutes to spend with the one and only Jerry Jim Gochin, who has basically lurked over the entire week's conversations, his long association with Eric Reed. And I said to Jerry that after, you know, after thinking of Eric at the Derby and the win, and then and Herbie Reed, the next person I thought of was the Jammer, knowing how happy he had to be for his longtime trainer. Jerry Jim Gochin joins us. Jerry, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm great, and people should realize that when any barn succeeds, everybody in the barn kind of rides along with, and a win like this, every owner that uses the winning trainer, for you it has to be really. I imagine it's been an incredible week as well, because you've been a supporter of Eric's for years and years.
It's ecstatic. Hey, Steve, before we talk about Eric, I really want to talk about you quickly. And I was looking at your website, Thoroughbred Racing's best known, longest running daily radio news magazine. I got to tell you, not only me, but everybody that listens to the show just respects you so much for what you do on a daily basis. And I got to tell you, I don't think you get enough credit sometimes, but I want to give you credit because I know how tough this show is to do just for a weekend when Roger Stein was doing it on the West Coast. But to do it every day and then to do it on Saturdays and Sundays, Steve, all of us really thank you for what you do. So that's just something
very
I wanted to get out because we haven't talked.
No, I appreciate it.
And good luck on your procedure. Good luck on your procedure, too. So let's have some fun with Eric. So, with regards to this course and the chaos and the craziness and the love and everything associated with Wrist Strike, I got to tell you that I got a call last year. Eric says, I got this colt that I want to claim. What's the pedigree look like? And I said, I'll check it out for you. I checked it out, and I said, I'm not interested in any colts, Eric. It doesn't fit my plan. But, go ahead. It looks pretty good. So I'm so happy for Richard and what he's done and how Eric and he have really carried the banner for horse racing through some difficult times for our country as well as horse racing. So I couldn't be any happier. I mean, it's amazing. He's made millionaires out of the players at Bill Terra Park, Mahoney, because, they bet Sonny and Eric. I mean, when my horses go on those races, I look at the tilt board and I go, who are these people betting this horse? And it's just remarkable. And I know there's a lot of people in Ohio and all around that couldn't be any happier over Rich Strike, because when Sonny and Eric put a horse in, they don't care what the hell he's racing. So anyway, just I'm happy.
I asked Eric on Monday, and he just laughed. How did you bet this race?
Well, as I said, all those people in Cincinnati and in California couldn't be any happier.
Oh, no. That says a lot. All right.
So anyway, that's that.
Well, you had, and Eric had said to me that you were confident leading up that you said, even when he was, even after the Lexington, when he got shuffled down from 22nd to like 25th, and then he had to work his way back up to be the first alternate, he said that, said Jammer kept saying, you're going to get in, you're absolutely going to run. Okay. You were confident.
Okay, that is so true, because after the Turf Bay Park race, I told Eric, you're in. He says, how can I be in? I only have 21 points. I said, you're in. Train this horse like you're in. And so 3 weeks passed, 2 weeks passed, Eric, you're in. Just shut up. Keep training the horse. So the Derby week comes. Eric says, I don't know we're going to get in. I said, Eric, you're already in. Train the horse. So this guy's driving back and forth from Lexington to Louisville, 3 o'clock in the morning, and he's training the horse. People are laughing at him. What the hell are you training this horse for? And I said, Eric, ignore it. Just train the horse. So I sent an email to Jay Privman and some of the riders saying, hey, you know, Eric's going to get in. At least talk to him, right? And it was so funny. So Friday comes, and Eric calls me, and he wakes me up and says, hey, I didn't get in. I go, wait 5 or 10 minutes. You're going to get in. He calls me back 4 minutes later and says, I got in. I go, I know. So how are we going to run today without another race? I said, don't you understand that this was karma? Earlier that week, I put a horse in the race, that Churchill that won pretty easy, called Enchanted Mile. And after the race, you know, we were happy. I said, well, that's only one win this week. You'll have another one. Don't worry about it. And I think it resonated on him, but I don't think he picked it up. But, I mean, it was karma week for Derby week for him. And, you know, I mean, I was so confident that for 3 weeks that he'd get in. And, you know, I'm not saying I did anything except just keep him pumped up and get him focused on the horse. And, obviously, look what happened. So, I mean, I couldn't be any happier, Steve. I know you're happy. I know Hammer's happy. Everybody's happy, and that's the way it is, right?
You know, you understand the game at virtually every, you know, every level. So for this story to involve a horse that was claimed for $30,000, and I mean, in terms of an inspiration for people that operate at virtually every level of the game, it's just so heartening. And you know, then you fold in the fire at Mercury and Eric doubting whether you know he could muster the, you know, the fortitude to go on. It's just amazing. And I mean, I know some people are now, you know, questioning everything because of their decision not to participate next Saturday. But it's just something that people that, you know, that dream of getting to the Derby, and I mean, the fact that they win is, it just seems even impossible a week later.
Well, I talked to Rick and Eric for a long time, you know, prior to this decision being made, and you know, Rick says, well, what would you do? And I said, hey, I do what you're going to do, and that's not run in the Preakness, because this horse needs time. He's proven he needs time. Eric's all about the horse. Rick is certainly all about the horse. And what's best for the horse is what we do as owners, right? So, I mean, look at it. I'm sure Eric and Rick would love to run in the Preakness, but that's not right for this horse. And as an owner, you have the responsibility to the horse. And, you know, that's just the way I feel about it. You know, I've been with Eric for 14 years, and he's changed as a trainer. He's changed as a person. He's always been just a great person to deal with. I mean, I'm sometimes controversial, right, Steve? So yeah. Eric was kind of scared of his own shadow when we started, and craziness continues to happen to our relationship. Like, I mean, we had 2 claims voided at Keeneland on horses, but one won the race, and the other horse ran second, and both claims were voided. And I'm saying to myself, well, the universe must be telling me that they don't want me to be climbing horses in Kentucky for obvious reasons, right? So, anyway, we went through the rule book, and I said, Eric, they're not going to void our claims anymore because we're going to put something on the back that says our claims are unvoidable pursuant to the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission rules. So, you know, I've kind of helped him develop as a trainer because, as you know, the trainers don't really know all the rules sometimes. And
sure.
my business plan is such that, hey, I'm actually trying to make money. I've got 120-something horses now and 40 in training with Eric. And, you know, we have to run this as a business. And Eric and the real trainer, Kay Reed, she's the backbone. She's the backbone of the organization. And when I talked to Eric after the win, I said, God, Eric, you didn't even congratulate the real trainer, your wife. And I just got all over him. And so when I was talking to Kay in the morning and Eric called me, and I said, you know, you've been replaced. Kay's a trainer now. You go find other owners. And it was, you know, it was so refreshing because he just loves her so much, and she doesn't want any notoriety. She just wants to work and take care of the horses. And Eric will be the first one to admit that without Kay Reed, that, yeah, he's not winning anything because she's so special, and she has got such a positive attitude. And, I mean, they do anything for me. I mean, and I do anything for them. I bought them an equine spa, one of those ice machines, and that helped us tremendously with keeping our horses sounder and giving them a better opportunity to be successful. And I mean, he shifts anywhere, he claims anywhere. I mean, I couldn't have a better trainer, and I couldn't have a better person, and I couldn't have a better team. And you know, and Eric deserves all of this. And I mean, everybody knows him, and people that don't know him now know him. And it's critical that people like this get the notoriety that he's getting. And, I mean, you and I both agree on this, all this stuff, so, yeah.
Yeah, I no doubt. And then I started the show on Monday. I started the coverage with what I thought was really the companion story, which was Jason Cook in that Knicks Go, a guy who had to, you know, kind of pare down his operation to take care of his daughter when her wife died when she was 3 years old. And, you know, he's got 7 horses, which is all he feels, you know, he can handle. And, you know, he wins a stake on Derby Day, a horse that was claimed for 40, and that was magical. And then for this to end the way it did for the Reeds, and it's the whole thing is amazing. And in fact, you and Sonny and Eric, you've got a stake try tomorrow. I brought that up earlier with Scott Shapiro. You're in the Mamzelle together with Royal County, and then in fact, it's not Sonny, but Santo Sanger next week. Tuesday or Wednesday, you got a stake at Indiana together as well. Sneaky, slick, and fast.
Yes, slick, sneaky, and fast, Medaglia d'Oro filly. And, yeah, we have 8 horses running next week. And, you know, hey, but I got to tell you, don't you remember Jelly Cable was a stakes place horse? You didn't do Jelly Cable, she was stakes place, and you didn't talk about Lefty Lenny either, right?
I should
remember Lefty Lenny?
Well,
isn't
Lenny Shulman due for another horse to be named after? You got another one coming up?
Yeah. But I just want to tell you that I need another name for your horse because I want to name another horse after you. So you think about it. But I got another horse I want to name for you.
Filly or colt?
Filly, because I don't have colts.
Yeah, as
Hammer said, there's one other thing. I was telling you that Eric, he's not as scared of the shadow like he used to be. He's gotten bolder, I think, for obvious reasons. But Well, Hammer, I was talking to Hammer, and I said, you know, Eric was really concerned that after he wins the Derby, that craziness is going to happen to him with regards to things, you know, whatever. And I said, to Eric, I go, what are you worried about? You just won the Derby, and you got insurance. And he goes, what do you mean I got insurance? I go, Eric, you're untouchable. You just won the Derby, and you got a policy with Jammer Insurance. And he says, oh, yeah, Jammer Insurance. Everything's going to be fine now. He says, because I got protection from Jammer Insurance. I said, yeah, Eric, I think you're going to be fine now because all these trainers look over their shoulder, you know, I can't get stalls and whatever the story is. You know, fortunately, Mercury, we've got plenty of stalls there. But it's just so funny how these trainers are always kind of looking over their shoulder to the regulators. And, you know, I'm sure that, I'll tell you one thing, if I won the Kentucky Derby, I'm sure the KHRC would kind of file a complaint against me for having my horse run too fast or wearing the wrong colored blinkers. So thank goodness I didn't own this strike.
I love it. Jerry Jam Gochin with us, who you know is responsible for everybody referenced that it was Sonny Leone's first graded stake win, and it was Eric's second. And of course, during the Zenyatta run, you saw the opportunity to run against her in both Rivenel and Satan's Quick Chick, and you came real close.
Oh, I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody the other day about the Rinterval Zenyatta race. I would have never got out of Del Mar alive if that would have happened, because at that time, it was pretty frosty between me and the CHRB. I mean, you know, I think that was the time that Shapiro and those guys were there after they keyed my car and everything else. So it would have been a tough exit of Del Mar if she would have won. But, you know, after the race, she galloped past Zenyatta, so she wanted some more. But obviously, Zenyatta and Jerry Moss's horse was just a champion all the way around. But, you know, Eric, you know, he'll take on anybody if he's got the right shot. And like when Richard said, yeah, yesterday we put horses in to win races, I mean, that's true. I mean, you know, every owner does that. And we try to find the best spots as possible. And that was a spot that we thought we could win because that was a pretty paceless race. And anyway, it was fun. And it's just another story that I have with Eric that, you know, Satan's Quick Chick winning the Ravens run at Keeneland. I mean, to tell you how little I knew, I was trying to scratch her, and John Beach wouldn't let her out. So if I would have scratched her, we would have never won that race either. So Eric had her primed to come up
funny.
The hill. There's a Ray Pollock wrote an article about that, you know, and I was kind of embarrassed that here I am trying to scratch the winner of the Ravens run. So, you know, but then the other thing, one other thing, I was watching the Derby with my wife, and so they're getting ready to go into the gate. I go, watch Sonny, he's in the 21 hole, he's going to turn left to go to the rail. And sure enough, boom, Sonny. Sonny goes right to the rail because I ask my jockeys, for the most part, if we can, to get to the rail, keep one hand on the rail at all times because it's usually going to open up. And if it doesn't open up, I'm okay with running second or third. But for the most times, that rail will open up. And if we have the horse, it's the old Rich Strike. And I'm going to name a horse Richie Derby Strike. So I have a couple
good.
Colts
I like
in
it.
This year. So yeah. So I need your name, and maybe we'll even have a name of a horse, Hammer and Jammer. I kind of like that too.
I love it. Jerry, it's so great to hear you. I'm so excited about the game and about this circumstance. And I knew to myself as I was driving back and trying to organize the week in my mind, I said, I got to get Jammer on. So I appreciate this. And it sounds like you're going to come to New York. You bringing the family?
We'll see you at Belmont, yeah. And we'll see you at the Belmont.
Excellent.
Frank will be ready to roll. And we look forward to seeing you, Steve. And good. good luck to you and your procedure. You know, everybody, you're a gem of the industry, and I had to say it because it's just so true. So.
It's greatly appreciated, Jerry. I really appreciate it very much. Jerry Jim Gochin, everybody, and a longtime supporter of Eric Reed, and they've done good things together. And a lot of Eric's top performers were jammer horses, and of course what he's referring to, the filly that he heard me talking about, the jelly cables coming apart at Turfway years ago when the poly track was disintegrating, and the explanation was the jelly cables. And so he named a filly Jelly Cable. It was made the funniest thing. And she was nice. She was stakes placed. He subsequently sold her, I know. I'm tracking the progeny. I know that there's actually a St. Patrick's Day yearling out there. I didn't see if she's dropped this year, but she was a nice Sky Mesa filly, Jelly Cable. He's a character, Jerry Jim Gochin. I think Paul Matisse is standing by right on time for the annual postmortem, and we go through, we lick our wounds, or we raise our glasses. Paul Matisse, good morning.
I'm here. How's it going, Steve?
It's good. It's good. I think you and I had similar experiences Friday and Saturday, and let's dive into this because we always, you know, use the full amount of allotted time. Your thoughts and your approach going into Friday and Saturday.
Well, going in, you know, one of the things that happened this year, and it's happened all over the place, but the figures and the race days that where all these horses were coming off of were very difficult to decipher figure-wise, and for a mirror of reasons, all in racing kind of common problems that we have, timing issues. You know, for example, the Wood Memorial was, if you went off the time, you know, Mo Donegal, if you believe the time and get a raw figure, you know, he was a lock in the race, which I don't think anybody really believed. You had the California races where the short fields have been producing some of these high figures that I didn't think meant anything, and they were hard to decipher, you know, which races are good and which races are bad because they're four-horse fields and tracks that are, you know, hard to figure out bias-wise because they're so short fields. So you had even some of the other races, the Louisiana races come off those mile and 3/16 races now that nobody really knows anything what to do with historically for figure-wise. I don't know, Gulfstream had some wild races where horses had fallen in some of the races. So the Oaklawn race was slow as can be. I mean, you just had so many variables where, and then what turned out to be the biggest variable, which is another thing that racing is dealing with and probably going to have to deal more with, is, again, somehow, is that, you know, the synthetic race was actually fast. But what to do with it and what that meant, you know, it just was a lot of confusing things going in. So it wasn't surprising to me that a lot of things that happened were confusing as they progressed.
You bring up a couple of things in there. You know, Jerry Brown made the point, even in advance of what he wrote in his Derby Oaks, you know, analysis, the feature that he offers, the seminar. He was concerned about the Gulfstream races, and that he said that all winter long he was uncomfortable with the figs, and he did he said he was waiting for the end of you know, the Wood and Bluegrass and so forth, you know, the last set of big preps, because then he wanted to go back over and see if anything needed to be adjusted. And so you bring up a very salient point that it there were a lot of mitigating factors that contributed, and I think that's what made, to some degree, the race a little confounding for people. I mean, other than Epicenter and Zandon, and then the funny thing ends up being that the two of them, you know, in any normal running, you know, probably run 1-2, you know, 93 times out of 100.
Yeah, but you know what? One other thing that got me confused, that, you know, more so than other, I wasn't sold that those horses were superior either, you know. And I think the fact that they got beat by Rich Strike with both fairly good setups kind of proves what I was thinking. So, you know, there are derbies sometimes when you get that feeling, you know, just... you know, one that comes to mind that's easy is the Wood Memorial with Funnyside and Empire Maker, where it was apparent that they had improved before the Derby and they were just better to me, you know. And then they run 1-2, and there was no way, didn't matter what the race fell apart, they were going to run 1-2 in that race, you know. And it didn't matter about circumstances. And this race here just always smelled like circumstances were going to play into a factor, because none of the horses were that good, or at least we couldn't see it. You know, I think a lot of people were convincing themselves that, you know, that the horses were maybe a little bit better. So that's what handicappers do. I'm not being critical. You have to get to a you know, opinion to make a wager, you know. And this one was very difficult to if you're being real honest with all the information. That's really tough to explain to somebody who only bets a few times a year. And, you know, most people are pretty knowledgeable now, even if they play the bigger races, you know, because that's kind of the world we live in, with these big races are kind of the where all the handle is, and, you know, that's kind of what racing's going. That's a tough thing to even explain to somebody like that, you know, or even to the people listening today. It was very complicated, you know, situation. So much so that my gut feeling going right before the race was not to bet it. And I almost got there, and I almost didn't bet the Derby for the first time in my life. And then my mother called, and she put her bets in, and I said, well, if my mother's going to bet it, I got to bet something.
How did you bet the race?
I spread around with just some things that if I was right, that I wanted to, wanted to be right on. You know, the California horses had run the highest figures, and I didn't trust either one of them. Tava at 12-1, you know, morning line was probably just a terrible line, but that seemed more reasonable than 5-1, you know, when he was going. And I thought that the Japan horse had trained well, and I didn't want him to run good and beat me. And there was just a bunch of things where, you know, using Zandon and some of the other horses behind. But I think the sad part is that, you know, in this modern day of racing, Rich Strike was a horse that maybe if he had raced in dirt races, there would have been something that you could have seen to play him. As it turned out, and the way that the race was, and all the things, there's no way you could play him. He was actually an underlay at his odds. You know, it just... there's not much you can do about it. I mean, that's horse racing, you know. I just think that some of the things that are going on in racing, I keep telling to people, and everybody just shakes their head at me, but this is a real transition period that we are in racing, and it's creating situations that are not easy to decipher, and they're not historically driven, you know, and they're harder to, at least for me, they're harder to come to the right conclusions. You can kind of see it afterwards. You can kind of see it maybe during. You make some good moves. But those definitive, like I said, funny side, you know, Jerry Brown would tell you, Smarty Jones, the things where you just know what's going to happen, they're harder to come by now in just in this environment of racing.
And then you fold in some of the other external pressures, like, you know, like the computer-assisted money and what that does. I mean,
well, that definitely too, because the price, that's definitely part of it, for sure.
It makes it a little harder. What did your numbers, I mean, in terms of your, you know, your own figures that you make, what did Rich Strike look like as a synthetic, you know, off the synthetic performances, and then projecting, you know, potential when you folded in, let's say, you know, Keen Ice and the Smart Strike as the broodmare sire? I mean, was there any projection that could be made that he could have run the kind of, you know, a 202 and three derby and finish the final quarter in sub 25?
No, I don't think there was. That's the hard part. But he was improving. You know, so, you know, his figures had improved on the synthetic steadily. In fact, you know, even every race that he had run, basically, in his life, besides that one outlier where he had won at Churchill right in the middle, he was improving right along. You know, that's why I say if he had run in the dirt and he'd run in situations where he had gotten into the race by improving and showing some ability along the way, you know, it would have been... I don't think we would have been all just as dumbfounded as everybody was handicapping. With that said, the way it played out, you just there's just no way, you know. The only thing I did make a comment somewhere, you know, ahead of time, and I was aware of it, that usually that Jeff Ruby, you know, the old Spiral Stakes there at Turfway is usually not only on synthetic, but it's slow. But this year it was fast, and the two horses that had beat him were of a higher quality, you know, than in recent times. And again, I didn't know what that meant. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I there's no possible way you could have got to the horse, you know, in the handicapping world that we live in, you know.
Right.
So that's, and you know what? That's racing. I mean, sometimes that happens. You know, that's, you know, nobody wants it to happen on the Derby, you know, when it's where a lot of people, and where you're forced to bet more nowadays on the way the racing is. If you're doing this every day, you're still forced to bet more on these Saturdays. And so I'm sure nobody wants to hear that, but that's just that's the world of sports, as my uncle likes to say.
Well, exactly. And I do want you to address the question of the week, which has come up daily regarding, you know, this all-button concept where the people that did score, had scored handsomely, six-figure scores, and we're also aware out of New Orleans of a seven-figure score on the day. So we could fold that in before we get to that, and then we can also talk about the Oaks and the two-day bets and, you know, the other, you know, the races before and after Derby. But before we get to that and continue that review, was this as fast as expected, faster than expected to you? I mean, in terms of the pace, what had you anticipated in terms of those splits going in?
Well, I think some people have mentioned, obviously the pace was fast, but they've mentioned Summers Tomorrow, which I don't think is the key to why the race turned into this blitz, you know, crazy fast pace. The key was, and I don't think anybody could have predicted it, was that the Japanese horse, you know, Crown Pride would be the one that would just, you know, wildly send, you know. I mean, it was clear that he had speed, but, you know, for a world-class jockey like Christophe Lemaire was coming here to ride, that didn't seem to be that was going to be his tack, you know, just to wildly send to try to make sure that Summers Tomorrow didn't get away from him, you know. You kind of knew that once it was fast, that the other guys were going to fall into place because there were so many of those. I think you mentioned it a bunch of times. There were so many people that wanted to be that stalk and pounce type.
Yes.
You know, and in the heat of the battle, those guys were going to be forced to go, you know, like Cyberknife and Zozos and Messier and a bunch of those horses that made those wild backside moves into the fast pace. You kind of knew they were gonna do that whether the pace was slow or fast, you know. But so once it got heated up, there was no turning back, you know. as far as, you know, like figure-wise, the pace was really fast, you know, right from the get-go, but it never slowed. That's the difference, you know, like Justify. You know, we've talked about this before. Pace is so complicated, it's hard to put just on labels of fast and slow. I know it's the easiest way to do, and it works most of the time, but it's so much more complicated that when you really get into it. And Justify was a horse that went fast early in the first maybe eighth to a quarter of a mile, but then it slowed, and he never downlined. He just stayed at a high level the whole way, you know, whereas this is a race that was fast and kept going fast, you know,
yeah.
and went past all these horses' ability, you know, too early in the race, you know, classic, you know, early downline, you know, fast pace. But we've had a couple of those recently, you know, the Distaff and the Breeders' Cup was another one that was just like that. You know, we don't see them too often anymore, but so that's the most recent one that comes to mind. And my feeling is usually it's hard to measure how a horse is going to run off a race like that. But for the most part, and, you know, for everybody listening, the most part, horses run good off of these races. You know, pretty much almost all of them, it seems to sharpen them up. You know, that's why, of course, we live in the world that nobody runs. So I don't think it's going to mean anything if the horse doesn't run back till the Jim Dandy. You know, you can kind of throw it out the window. But anybody that ran back fast, I think, was probably at an advantage. I think most of the horses that will run, I'm not even sure how many there are. There may only be one or two, but the ones that ran in the Derby to the Preakness, I would take it as a good sign, even though the final figures are slow. So it's confusing coming in, confusing going out.
Great. Well, let's talk about two of the horses as well out of the Derby that we know are participating, and that's Epicenter and Simplification. And I made the point, earlier in the week, Desert Dawn. I cashed off of the opinion on Desert Dawn on Friday because of the way I bet. Simplification, even actually if he had finished third, I was not. There was no ticket that had Rich Strike on top. I keyed Simplification, but I keyed him the same way I had keyed Desert Dawn with seven or eight horses in first and second, and Simplification with a wind bed, and then, you know, trickling down from there. Is Epicenter's effort, is it Congaree-esque, going back to 2001? We also have been bringing up Oxbow's Derby into the Preakness. That was an Orb's win. Simplification, Paul, I've made the case that they run this race 100 times. Simplification probably wins two or three times.
Well, I mean, you know, if he had gotten the ride that Rich Strike had gotten, he would have won, you know. Not that it was critical of the ride that he got.
Right.
That how great the ride on Rich Strike was. They switched trips and the result's the same. Simplification, you know, it's so hard because your gut is that you don't want to play the horses off the fast pace. You know, that's what I was trying to get at before. I don't think that it's enhanced, you know, his performance, at least the way I look at it, because my figures, I didn't give the Derby, you know, the final figure is not very fast. So I think he'll run back to what I the way I'm looking at it. If somebody, you know, I wanted to get into this a little bit, but doing the Derby figures is all over the place, which doesn't surprise me because everybody probably was, you know, all over the place going in. The final figure is going to vary in certain places. I guess most people have it slow, but I would think that's a pretty true indication of what Simplification can do, as well as Epicenter. I'm not giving them anything extra, I guess is what I would say. I would say what you saw as performance is probably what you're going to get back in the Preakness. Don't expect them to do more than that. You know, whereas Oxbow was a horse where you could actually take a guess that he's going to run better, you know, off his performance in the Derby. I wouldn't say that with Epicenter and Silver Cage. That they're not going to run better. With that said, that may still be good enough to win. You know, I think they'll perform well. They're just not going to be. I'm not tabbing them up off the races. If that makes sense.
No, it does. It flesh for a second, flesh out the fig element, and you saw that Andy gave it a 101, and is very. He was with us Monday first, and is very happy with the figure and the way it lays out. And Jerry Brown, I don't know if you've seen the Thoroughgraph numbers came out on Wednesday night, and a 1.5. And there again, when you go down the chart, the number seems to line up pretty well. So I mean. You know, solid but hardly spectacular in both cases. I mean, does that fit your? I haven't seen the rag number.
The rag, they gave it slow. It's like a 10. I saw that this morning. The I'm probably in between a little bit more. The Derby figure probably doesn't mean much. You know, when it's all said and done, because of the pace, there's going to be so many horses that improve off of it that were in the pace. But, so I think that what Jerry and Andy did to get the horses that ran off the fast pace to pair up and kind of run what they always do was pretty smart. However, the whole day is a little weird to me because from what I'm seeing, what everybody's doing is they're not using one variant for the whole day. So we've got some... And some of these other races, if we're going to get to them at some point, is going to create some, you know, some huge discrepancies when you see some of these other races. And I think everybody should be aware of that. Depending on what, you know, I think that's more important how the figures are going to play on some of these other races. You know.
Well, then let's do that. Then let's either back up, or if you want to start with any of the races that you think are particularly germane on this, and I don't think we'll spend a lot of time on the grass races, but I do want to ask your opinion of the trend or the unusual circumstance that Andy Serling immediately noticed coming out of Saturday is the oddity of having turf horses spread out the field instead of the usual bunched finishes that we're used to in turf racing. For whatever reason, this course seems to be, you know, getting horses spread out, which is just an oddity.
Well, the turf was extremely biased on this weekend, and that's probably the most thing that you can probably go over. And the form is not going to hold up at all off these turf races. The inside was terrible. The way that the new turf course. Now, you know what's interesting? Churchill, historically, when they first put their turf course in, when the rails were up, inside speed did okay. This goes even back, you know, when I used to hang around there 35 years ago. As soon as the rails came down, you couldn't be anywhere near the hedge. And the horses would come rolling. Over time, that stayed in place slightly, but it seemed to even out over the course of my lifetime. And now that they redid the track, it must be like a natural bias, which is, you know, the things in racing that I really like. I don't like when we try to adjust them. With the way tracks have natural biases are the best things to follow. And the Churchill turf course, when it's on the hedge, seems to be where it's going to go to be. You don't want to be anywhere near the inside. And that's why I say the form isn't going to hold up, because as the weekend progressed and as the jockey started riding off the rail more, the times got faster, which would make sense. So doing figures on the turf became very difficult. The horses on the inside are going to run way better. Anybody that wants to go back and watch those races, give extra credit to anybody that was on the rail. I don't think being on the lead was very good, though there were so few paces that were so slow that the horses hung in there a little bit. But it's not going to be your formful Belmont turf where the horses come back and run similarly, you know, or Hong Kong, you know, where they just all line up and they roll again, you know, in different spots. It's like Little Andy said, it's more like a dirt. You know, you're gonna have a bias type situation. So, you know, instead of going into detail and getting to every single one of them, I think that's a good way to handle a turf. If you want to go back and watch those races, to definitely give extra credit to anybody that was inside.
Well, and then the inverse of this. Let me just note this as Paul discusses it. These are the winners of the turf races over the weekend. Friday and Saturday. Aviano was in the left from the 8 hole. That was on Friday in that allowance. Bleecker
Wider
Street
too. And 8 of 8 was, too. I mean that was the last 8 of
yes.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. 8 of 8. Bleecker Street was 8 of 9. New Year's Eve was 9 of 10. Arrest Me Red in the sprint was 10 of 13. The only horse that was in posted was Lady Rockstar, who was just spectacular for Brendan Walsh in that allowance. Speak of the Devil was 8, and she rallied wide. Speak of the Devil, which tells you Gaffleone making the right decisions. Speak of the Devil was 8 of 8 in the Distaff Turf Mile. Then we go to Stolen Base, who was 9 of 11 in the American Turf, and Santin, who was 10 of 10.
There you go.
How about that?
Yeah, Santin was a race that I kind of got upset with myself by that I didn't play that right when it came up. I just boxed him and Adriano and didn't take the race all that seriously. And at that point, I should have been more in tune of that there was an opportunity there with that horse. But that's how it goes sometimes.
I didn't like Ean's horse, though, that Mira Mission. I didn't at all.
I didn't either. That's why I didn't hit anything. But I might have been able to, if I took it more serious, to hit something there, you know, especially with the other horse running third.
Well, Paul, let's stay with Saturday's dirt races then and get some thoughts. Did you have any notion that Three Technique was going to run big? Jack Christopher, of course, was going to be a heavy favorite. Then came the Filly and Mare 7/8 race. And, you know, Jackie's Warrior is a special animal, it seems. Some thoughts about Saturday's dirt.
Well, the number one thing I'm going to say, and nobody in the industry wants to hear it, and nobody's doing figures is paying attention enough. But you know, I don't care about if they don't want to do this. So, this is another day when the races with LASIKs are the fastest races on the card. I don't know when, you know. This idea that you just project the figures when there's another problem where I was talking about earlier about doing figures is that when you have half the horses running with LASIKs and half of them not running on LASIKs now, they did last time, they're not running on this time, they're coming back on LASIKs, which isn't, it's not like a on and off thing. It's much more complicated than that. You have a situation where the two fastest races on the day are Creative Minister, the mile and 16th race that McPeak ran, which he ran so good, I don't even know what to make of him. I know it was with LASIKs, but he was just ridiculously good. You know, he ran into a slow pace on the inside, which wasn't the greatest. It might not have been a bias, but it certainly wasn't an advantage. And just blew by him, blew by good horses in that race, and ran a huge figure. But it was with LASIKs, so I don't know what that's going to mean going forward. But that's, you know, that's a fast race. And then the last race of the day, Strobe, is a first-time starter. And those are the two fastest races of the day. So now what most people are doing with these figures is they're just taking them out and don't believe them. Well, that's not how you do figures. That's not speed figures. If you're going to stop doing them, you know, call them something else. You know, and I'm not saying it's easy. You know, this is like, what I said earlier. This is the world we're living in, you know, handicapping. But if we're going going to do speed figures, we're going to, you know, you got to tab the races that are fast. Those are the two fastest races. You know, the Jackie's Warriors one is a real weird one. That race is slow, but they were way off the rail, and it was a slow pace, and it was sandwiched between the two turf races. If somebody wanted to take that one out and look at it, you know, I guess I'll give it to you. It seems like everybody has, even, you know, everybody just is going through the assumption that they can't believe that it's that slow. But I'd be careful about the Jackie's Warrior race going forward. It's not fast. It's slow. I don't know what that means. You know, this is going to be your handicap. But don't just go with the assumption that it was a typical fast sprint race. And when you see the figure next time, well, it was just, you know, it was just another one of these fast races that sprint horses run. You know, it's not. It's a slow race. It's complicated. And it was a race where the race quickened up, and Jackie's Warrior was in the 4 and 5 path in the turn. So horses got ground loss, and the Aloha West was on the rail at the wrong part of the race when he ran, and just a lot of horses didn't get good situations, and the race was slow. So just makes it, again, it makes a lot of this complicated when you come back. You know, that we're seeing a lot of these things in racing, and I know people want to make it simple so they get to some conclusion, and I understand it, and I think that's, you know, what you have to do, otherwise you get too confused. But to me, you better beware. You're going to have races that you're going to have scenarios and situations where horses win the Kentucky Derby and pay $170 when you have situations like this. You can't just say, I'm shocked. You know,
how good was Jack Christopher?
You know, he was great. I don't know what to make of that because, you know, those are the results that unfortunately, it's not great for betting, but, you know, if Chad Brown is going to run a horse in a tough spot off a long layoff, you can bank on he's going to run. He's going to run good, and there's not a lot to go on more than that. You know, the way he works the horses, it doesn't stand out. You can't really separate it one from the other. You just basically, you have to just go on his opinion. If he's going to run them in a good spot, they're going to run good. He's not doing it. He's not going to the school of you know, like a Wayne Lucas, Nick Zitto, the older school type. He's not going for just to participate, you know.
Yeah.
Whether that's good or bad for racing, that's a whole other argument. But as you're betting, you can just count on that he's going to win.
No, he was very mean. He had every reason to be pleased as he was with that effort. And Papacap actually showed a new dimension by and it actually ended up being probably a good gambit trying to go to the lead and you know, take it wide.
Yeah, I expected him to run good. I didn't expect him to be as aggressive as he was, but he definitely ran good. I don't know how good he is when it's all said and done at the top level. But he's a nice horse, and if he improves, he just has to improve, which 3-year-olds can, you know.
Well, and speaking of improvement, before we talk about Friday, I do want to get an opinion on 3 Technique, that Jason Cook, a huge moment for him and his daughter with the former August Dawn runner. And I thought Jason was very telling when he said, you know, I was kind of watching this horse and felt to me like they were giving up too soon.
Disappointing race on the card for me. That was the most disappointing race in the card. I used 3 Technique pretty good in the race, and I really liked Necker Island. It was one of my bigger opinions of the whole day. He seemed like the whole race that I thought he was going to win the whole race. He got an absolute perfect trip. He dragged right into the race, right, exactly the way I envisioned it. And I can't believe how flat he, you know, how he leveled off in the stretch. And if he had run even second, I think I even had it third, I think I even had a third with him with three technique just because it was so pricey. But a three technique Necker Island Exacta would have been, I couldn't have lost for the week if that had come in. So that was very disappointing.
That says it all. I hear you. That Necker Island did not finish the way you expect the Hartman runners to finish.
No, of all the horses, I went back and watched all these races last night since I was coming on, and I just, everything kind of makes sense to me afterwards, and that one doesn't. I just don't know how he didn't run better from where he was. It just, I can't believe he didn't keep going on, but.
Well, that gives us about 10 minutes, Paul, to look at Friday and start with the Oaks. And this was funny because you and I touched base, and I had a horse run third, my pick run third, and one of those rare times where I bet properly, instead of not winning on top. And I thought 50-1 was completely insane on Desert Dawn, kind of backed into an okay weekend and a good day Friday because of her. Talk about the fillies.
Yeah, well, I thought Desert Dawn was a major player, and as it turned out, I mean, where the race came up, that was pretty much the only way I thought you could play the race is kind of around her, and I was able to hit the triple, which luckily I did, or I would be looking for. I'd be going up to Green, up your neck of the wood looking for a loan, probably. Since nothing else went right, but it was a pretty logical result, I thought, in the Oaks. You know, it was a less wildly run race. It had a solid pace, but it was pretty formful. I made one stupid bet because I didn't play. I threw Echo Zulu out of everything, including the super, so I didn't hit the super, which was kind of silly in retrospect. But and she ran pretty good. I just didn't think that she would be at her best going a mile and an eighth off one race. But and I also got psyched out. The whole Asmussen factor, which is another thing that in racing that is difficult nowadays because, you know, you had a trainer that was not doing good in Kentucky, and then they all show up on this big day and what to do with them. And your instincts, at least an older horse player's instinct, is to just go against them. But with a barn like Asmussen, it's not like all the horses are in the same barn, you know, and not all of them are trained the same way, and all of them are in different on different paths. So his A horses are going to come in with a different path than all the horses that have been running all week that have been stable at Kentucky for longer periods of time. And that's another thing that's tougher with these trainers that have hundreds and thousands of horses. You know, it's not the trainer angles and patterns of the old days of, you know, a barn, you know, in quotations, are not the same, especially at the higher level, when it seems like there's only a handful of trainers that you're dealing with week in and week out, and you're not going to have those old school situations in it. I know it's something I got to get better at. I get faked out on it too much.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up because some people that I talked to leading into the weekend, including a very good trainer that operates on the same circuit as the Asmussen barn, and so observes how they operate. They were thrown off a little bit and a little concerned about the fact that Asmussen worked Epicenter 5 furlongs and leaned on him a week out, which is something they've never seen him do. And I asked Steve about it on Tuesday, and he explained, because when you say that about, certain barns and certain expectations, I mean, you expect on the Saturday before Derby that the Asmussen runners are going to go a half and 49, you know, with a decent gallop out. He put a stiff work into him, and then he explained he was unsatisfied with the work the previous week and felt the horse needed a little bit more. So instead of being something that you say, wow, he really put the screws down, in some cases it was unsettling to some people to see him work him that way.
Oh, I thought that was negative myself. I was with the train that you talked about. I know there was a lot of talk that was positive that they liked the way the trainer. I thought the same as the trainer. I thought it was a sign that he didn't like him, you know, going in. You know, he was a horse that I wasn't against, because obviously he was his A game was, you know,
going to be good.
He was the more in my favorite. He had, his performances were good, you know, but I wasn't 100% sold on the way he was coming into the race. So I understand what he was saying. And then with the whole idea that the whole barn's going bad, you know, two or three days out, you could really, or even a week out, you know, old school thinking is, well, maybe this, you know, none of these horses are going to run. But it seemed obvious certainly by the Derby, and it seemed obvious even by the Oaks that wasn't going to be the case when the good horses are probably are going to perform closer to their ability. And, you know, we didn't mention Secret Oath. Secret Oath, you know, we talked about how great a ride that Rich Strike got. Secret Oath got a great ride, too. You know, she's obviously a nice filly, and she's shown it before, and I'm not sure she can win the Preakness. I think that's probably, she's going to be an underlay going into the Preakness. Not that she's way behind these top horses, but I just think that she'll be overbet. With the other horse not running, she'll be the story, and she's got to run better than she ran in the Oaks to win. So I would, my gut is that I'd be against her, especially with, I thought she got a pretty good setup, as it all turned out, too, because of the ride, you know, from post one and situation that could have been, for a horse that's a free-running horse like that, he obviously, you know, watch the mistakes that the jockey had made in the Arkansas Derby, and he wasn't going to let that happen this time. And it was pretty impressive how he rode that horse. That was it's always impressive to ride when you ride the winner of it and probably the best horse in the race. But he didn't make any. He made sure that the mistakes that could have happened didn't happen.
Everybody listening is waiting for you to give out this year's Maracuja. Who on either day is the 2022 bet back that you produced a year ago? And if you don't have one yet, that's all right. We'll save it for down the road.
You know, I don't know where he's going to... I'm going to tell you a horse that's going to run good that's going to be... unfortunately, probably not going to be in the right spot, but a horse that nobody in the world is going to tell you is going to run good the next time, which I think is going to, is Happy Jack. How's that for one that's absolutely wild? I think that Happy Jack will...
He's running in the Preakness.
He is? Well, that's a good one to throw in then, in the Preakness. But I didn't know that he was running.
He's running in the Preakness, and Doug O'Neill obviously taking the same clue as you are. Why?
I think. Well, I just think that the whole scenario of the race, even though he was off the pace, I saw some things in the race where I thought that he improved, and I wouldn't be shocked if he runs better. I'm not saying he's going to win the Preakness. That seems to be a big leap, but. I think he could definitely get in it. That's a wild pick for everybody.
Unbelievable. Got about two minutes, a couple of quick fill-ins. Olympiad. How good is Olympiad? What should they do with him?
You know, Olympiad is a tough horse. You know, he's shown now that he can run without Lasix, which is interesting. Not that he'd run bad without it before, but he just paired up. You know, he paired up the ability. The only thing I would say about Olympiad, he showed a lot more toughness in this race, which I like. I don't know if he's going to keep getting these situations where he can get into these easy stalking positions against good horse. That'll be the real test for him. You know, he's obviously a really nice horse, and he keeps showing up And I liked how he scrambled more in this race, where, you know, the horses came in on him and he bumped the horse that ran into the rail, and he lost the lead and he fought back. But I don't know how he's going to react in a situation where, you know, let's say where he's got to chase a Life Is Good, you know, or he's not, obviously not running, but Nick's Go type, you know, like in a situation where he's going to fall out of favor in his perfect, you know, where his style, you know.
Got it. Can't be.
You know, I'm doing in the last second here.
Yes. Real quick.
I do want to say, you know, the fact of Rich Strike skipping the race, you know, I understand what everybody's saying about how it's their horse and what they can do, but I do think that racing, all the things I've read and what all I've heard is, racing will be fine without it, blah, blah, blah. You know, when a horse that, like this, skips the Preakness, where you have connections that run routinely for $6,000 races at Mountaineer Park, and they're going to skip a million-and-a-half race where they're going to be one of the favorites. That, to me, that's a problem. Racing has a problem. That can't happen, you know. So the easy solution, right, where everybody says, is to switch the timing. That's not the solution.
No.
Somebody's got to dig deeper and come up with what the right solution is. Now, what that is, I'm not saying I have the answer, whether it's participation fees for appearance fees.
Bring back the Triple Crown bonus.
Maybe some guaranteed money for somebody that runs, a safe way to do that, so that nobody just runs the horse that's not sound. Maybe even guaranteed money. I don't know exactly what the right way to do it is, but
something
maybe
else.
A bonus to win both races. There is a problem, you know. This idea that the thing I don't like the most is that, you know, anybody can say, I don't believe that he's doing what's best for the horse, by the way. You got a horse that's got a chance to win a million and a half race against all the horses that he's running against in 2 weeks. You know, horses with similar form, Canonero and Mind That Bird, which are the closest in history to this horse, ran their best races of their lives in the Preakness. Not only that, did they ran better in the Preakness than they ran in the Derby. And they never ran good again. So holding back is, you know, because this is going to benefit the horse. One of the horses that always comes to mind when somebody says they're going to do the best for the horse is the ultimate wrong story, is Sudden Breaking News. Go look at that. They didn't run in the Preakness because it was best for the horse. And
right.
See how that one turned out. So this idea that it was best for the horse, I it's complicated. But my bigger point is, Preakness has a problem.
Paul Matisse, everybody. Paul Matisse Jr., as always, fabulous.
And racing has a problem, too. I'm sorry. Racing has a problem. It's a racing problem, not just a Preakness problem. It's a racing problem.
Paul, I got to pull up, but as always, spectacular.
Thanks, Steve. Yep.
Paul Matisse, everybody, and earlier, Jerry Jim Gochim, Hammer, Nick Tamaro, Scott Shapiro, and we got to get to Jim Miller next week, I guess. Marty McGee, good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday from Baltimore.
For making stallions and curly stands, Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join